The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. The way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply give up picking and choosing. This is one of my favorite lines of Dharma teaching, and it's the opening line of Kanshi Sosan's enlightenment poem, "That which is engraved upon the heart which trusts to the eternal." And some of you may remember that Kanshi Sosan is in our ancestral line, and he died in 606. So back in the 7th century, he was saying this, and I appreciate the laugh when I speak that line, because I think it's a little bit humorous for us Americans, because we love the first half. The way to the ultimate is not hard. So we can have the best thing there is, and it's easy, you know, enlightenment in a weekend workshop. But but then there's the second half. Simply give up picking and choosing. And the simply part is nice, right? But give up picking and choosing is really hard for us Americans, maybe us Westerners. We like being picky and choosy, as Reverend Master Hubert used to say. Now, if you read the whole poem, you may find that it's all about equanimity. And it's equanimity that I want to talk to you about today. And some of you may think that takes a lot of chutzpah or hubris on my part, or both, since equanimity may not be my strong suit. I seem to be making a habit of talking about things that aren't my strong suit. Maybe it's a case of those who can't do teach. But anyway, here we are, and I hope that I have something that to say that might be helpful. Equanimity is the last quality of mind to be perfected before Buddhahood, it is said, before one enters into Buddhahood. And this means that it's both very difficult to achieve and a very important state of mind to cultivate. So perhaps myself, I, and we can be pardoned for not being perfect at it. But we can keep trying. The theme of this weekend's retreat is meditation practice, and equanimity is directly related to our meditation practice. Equanimity is not picking and choosing. And in this sense, it's exactly what we do in our meditation practice. Because when we sit down to meditate, we just sit, fully occupying our bodies, and being with or being within whatever it is that arises. We don't pick and choose. Whatever arises, we're there for it. Our first response to whatever arises may be, go away, or please stay, depending on whether it's painful or pleasurable. The practice is to just stay with whatever arises, or then with our wish that it be different, or that something not change because we like how it is. So this just staying with whatever it is that's arising is the action of the equanimous mind. So equanimity is the basis of meditation, and meditation produces equanimity. So you have a constant positive feedback loop between the two. Equanimity is the usual English translation for the Pali or Sanskrit word upeka, which has two meanings, to be balanced and to be equal. So the mind of equanimity is balanced, calm, serene. The mind before it falls into extremes of emotional highs and emotional lows. And in that sense, it's a mind that's spacious and still, radiant and calm, that allows us to be fully present to life's changing circumstances. This is the serene in serene reflection meditation. And this does not mean that we are flatlined. Cultivating equanimity doesn't entail giving up, not feeling, not having emotions. And in fact, it can mean that we allow our emotions to be as they are and feel them fully with great clarity because we haven't muddied the waters with a reactive mind or with our preferences or with picking and choosing, and we're seeing our emotions with no filters, our emotional life can actually become more vibrant and alive and richer. And this is also true because the emotions aren't repressed and held back or held in. And as they become less distressing to us in this way, they become less harmful to both ourselves and others. It also doesn't mean, it does mean we're not flatlined, but we are non-reactive. Non-reactive. The non-reactive mind sees and feels fully what is present, but does not cling and does not push away. It lets go. If our meditation has a project, this is it. Rather than reacting to the conditions life throws in our face, we respond skillfully in ways that lessen suffering. This is true freedom. This is true freedom, being able to respond skillfully rather than being pushed around by the conditions we find ourselves in. And this makes me think of Jizo sitting here in the fires of hell with a calm and serene and non-reactive mind, just being with whatever's going on there, even though it's probably not pretty pleasant. So that's the balanced mind. The equal mind. Equal means that we meet all things equally, that we do not view some things as better than others, some people as better than others, some events, memories, insights, conditions as better than others. And this can be a bit of a stretch, but this is the impartial mind which regards all persons and things as inherently equal, and it is called in the sutra the insight into universal sameness. Insight into universal sameness. Perhaps one way we can access this is by considering that all beings, all things are Buddha nature equally. So we meet all that comes to us with all acceptance, the key to the gateless gate, rather than with judgment and criticism. This doesn't mean that discriminating wisdom ceases to function. We need to continue to be able to know that it's better to have pizza for lunch than feather pillows. And yet, who are we to say? Is the death of a child from cancer worse than their living to age 80? Who are we to say? The image that comes to mind for me in regard to this equal mind, the practices of this equal mind, is that I'm standing at the door of my house. Now, I don't have a house, but pretend that I do. And there's this long line of people outside waiting to come in. And all kinds of people are standing in this line, and I welcome them one by one. Welcoming them one by one is like welcoming each moment in the instant that it presents itself to me. And I welcome them with the same greeting and the same warmth and the same kindness, whether they're rich or poor, homeless, drug addicts, beautiful, intelligent, prisoners, you name it. A thief, as Rumi says, the Sufi poet Rumi says, a thief may be clearing you out for some new delight. So who's to say? Maybe a thief is not so bad, you know? Again, how do we know? Who are we to say? So it is this impartial mind which enables us to offer loving kindness to all beings equally and everywhere without discrimination, as Reverend Master Shiko described in her talk on loving kindness last Sunday. Her talk topic was a perfect segue into this. So this impartial mind allows us to offer loving kindness to all beings equally everywhere without discrimination. So equal or even is to stand, and balance is to stand in the middle of all this, the full catastrophe of living, without flinching. And again, I think of Jizo. Jizo's vow was to stand or sit at the gates of hell until all beings were free from hell, freed from hell, from the suffering of their lives. He didn't say, I'm going to free the deserving but not the undeserving. I'm going to free the ones I like, but not the ones I don't like. He said, all beings. So he sits with this mind of equanimity, equal and balanced, in the fires of hell. Also, if we recognize the equality of all things, that shuts down the comparative mind. And the comparative mind always leads to suffering. And it can be an interesting exercise to notice how often we compare ourselves to someone else, or how often we compare someone else to someone else. That mind shuts down, you forego a lot of suffering for yourself and others. So equanimity is really less a quality of mind that is cultivated, a noun, and more a way of relating to things, relating to all that is. It's a laying down of our eternal attempts to control and fix what can't be controlled and fixed. I'm always trying to control and fix. And instead, choosing to connect directly and deeply with our experience. That is choosing to love. So in that sense, equanimity is a verb, connecting directly and deeply with our experience, a way of relating to conditions rather than it being a condition itself. As we all know, the Buddha was very concerned about the fact of suffering and the way to the end of suffering. Dukkha, suffering, or lack of ease, or trying to fix things because we don't like how they are or aren't comfortable with how they are, is brought about or caused by our relationship to things, not by the things themselves, not by conditions. It's so easy to blame conditions. The Buddha did not say life is suffering. Rather, the Buddha taught that we suffer or we lack ease because of our relationship to things, how we react to the conditions that we encounter and make, construct, construe as we go through life. So we make, construct, and construe conditions as well as encounter them. It's not what's happening, it's how we regard it. We change that relationship and come to ease by practicing equanimity or love. Equanimity is impartiality. When we have no agenda and do not favor our friends over our enemies, this is true love and true spirituality. Now, if there is something that's flatlined, it's indifference. Indifference is the near enemy of equanimity. That is, it mimics equanimity, but it isn't it, because indifference actually carries an element of delusion in it. Indifference is a kind of a deadness, a lack of aliveness, while equanimity is aliving and breathing. The far enemy of equanimity is craving and clinging. which means that the opposite of equanimity is craving, clinging, grasping, attachment. Exactly those things that lead to suffering. And I think this is interesting to consider. The opposite of equanimity isn't disturbance or, you know, the water is all ruffled. It's craving, clinging, attachment. And as I just said, that's exactly what causes suffering. We bring an end to suffering by letting go. Instead of grasping, letting go. And the practice of equanimity is learning deeply what it means to let go. Again, this is our meditation practice. When we sit in meditation, in each moment, we let go, let go, let go. Keep letting go. So this is a practice we're doing all the time as we bring our meditation practice into our daily life. And when we do this practice, we're supporting the cultivation of the mind of equanimity. And in one sense, we could say that equanimity is letting go. And if we wish not to suffer and to enter into nirvana, then equanimity can't be dispensed with. Now, there's another modern Buddhist teacher who has listed 7 mental qualities which support the cultivation or development of equanimity. And the first one is virtue or integrity. And I think you can imagine how, when we break the precepts, how agitated our mind can become. I had a moment the other day where I was just slightly rattled over something and didn't respond very well. And it upset me for hours, you know, that sense of, in some way, I had not helped this person in the way that I could have. And it was a very small thing. So imagine if we did something really serious, the kind of disruption it can cause in the mind's ability to settle. The second one is the sense of assurance that comes with faith. Now, I love that, the sense of assurance that comes with faith. Faith can be a dirty word, but true faith is not a dirty word, and it does offer us this sense of assurance that at base things are okay, I guess, you know, and that sense of assurance can serve us well. The third is a well-developed mind, and this is referring to cultivating the mind of meditation, the mind of focused awareness, the mind of mindfulness. And that kind of stable mind, of course, is going to help support equanimity. And then there's a sense of well-being. And I wondered, you know, I mean, consider how much easier it must be to be equanimous here today in this room than in Aleppo when it's being bombed, you know. And on the other hand, those of us who live in this well-off Western culture don't always have a sense of well-being, and people who live in very poor countries do. So it's not a one-to-one correspondence, but sense of well-being supports equanimity. So does understanding or wisdom, and this has to do with shunyata or emptiness, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. Then there's insight, seeing into the nature of things as they are. An example would be recognizing the impermanence of all things. Because when we recognize impermanence, we let go. And letting go is a primary action of equanimity, the practice of equanimity. And then finally, freedom. And freedom means lack of reactivity, which I've just talked about. So if we develop these 7 qualities, then equanimity naturally follows. So the focus in our practice can actually be on developing those qualities and allowing the equanimity to appear of its own accord. Now I'm going to raise a question that I'm not going to answer. If all things are equal, does the question, am I spending my time well, have any meaning? Now, there's a number of questions like that that could arise as we're reflecting on equanimity, but just take that one. Am I spending my time well? Does it have any meaning? Is meditation better than murder? Is meditation sitting in front of the fire in my living room better than meditation in the meditation hall, or worse than meditation in the meditation hall? And I think what this kind of question brings to our attention is the fact that equanimity needs support. And part of the support that equanimity needs is skillful means. So we need to bring an element of skillful means to our practice of equanimity. What is it like to live equanimity? To me, it means meeting each moment evenly, with full attention, without prejudice, as it arises, like those people I was greeting at the door of my house. And again, it's the spit and image of our meditation practice, meeting each thing moment to moment. But the point is that equanimity can't exist in a vacuum. It's modified by other aspects of our training, as this teacher suggests with these seven qualities, by the development of other qualities of mind, and by the living of the Noble Eightfold Path. So all of those aspects of our practice modify and support equanimity. Now, as Reverend Master Shikho mentioned last Sunday, equanimity is one of the four Brahmaviharas, or divine abodes, or immeasurable minds, as they're called. And the first three, as she mentioned, are loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. Equanimity is the fourth, it comes last. And there are formal practices in some schools of Buddhism for cultivating these qualities of mind. And these practices are themselves very fine antidotes to anger in the case of loving kindness, cruelty in the case of compassion, and jealousy in the case of sympathetic joy. When we cultivate loving kindness, we have the wish that all beings be happy, free from suffering, at peace. When we cultivate compassion, we have the wish that all beings be free of suffering, that their suffering may come to an end. And when we cultivate sympathetic joy, we have the wish that all beings not lose their good fortune, whatever that good fortune may be. But when it comes to equanimity, the traditional phrases that are recited are, all beings are owners of their own karma. Their happiness and unhappiness depend on their actions, not on my wishes for them. All beings are owners of their own karma. Their happiness and unhappiness depends on their actions, not on my wishes for them. My first encounter with this, I found it a bit shocking. It was kind of like we were being all gooey and loving and kind and sweet, and then we kind of tossed people out on their own, on their behinds, you know, kind of like equanimity turns out to be tough love. And so for me, I needed to come to understand what this was about. And I think what this is trying to teach us is that try as we might to fix all that is wrong in the world, to end suffering in all its myriad forms, in the end, each individual has to bring an end to their own suffering. In the end, we have to recognize what the boundaries really are for us, what the responsibility really is, and what the true source of happiness really is, where it truly lies. When we can let go and rest in all acceptance. We can let go and rest in all acceptance. We can let go and rest in all acceptance in this recognition that all beings are owners of their own karma. We can rest in all acceptance of our own suffering and the suffering of others. And again, this doesn't mean that we don't care. Not caring is indifference. So we're back to that near enemy of equanimity, indifference, which looks like it, but it isn't. And it also doesn't mean that we don't do anything about suffering and its causes, especially in ourselves. But it does mean an end to compassion fatigue, We see what our limits are and live within them realistically. What we actually have control over and don't have control over. We can't save the world. But we can meet what arises with a calm and balanced mind without rejection or hatred or judgment. We can meet what arises with a calm and balanced mind without rejection or hatred or judgment. With an equanimous mind, we can meet suffering and sorrow again and again without being overwhelmed by them. So equanimity serves to balance loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy, and it is enriched by those three. Okay? Now, last Sunday, Reverend Master Shiko also read to us on loving kindness from an article by Ajahn Suchito, and he writes in the same article about equanimity, and he writes about it a little differently, in that he draws our attention to the fact that included in all beings is ourselves. We are owners of our own karma. So he writes, quote, "Equanimity counteracts the tendency to go up and down all the time, those extremes of emotions that I mentioned earlier. That tendency occurs when one doesn't understand karma for what it is. When we take karma to be self, then we go up and down with it. In meditation, we open up to past karma and try not to create new karma. Now, some of you may have noticed this as your meditation deepens, how this happens. And one of the monks here once wrote an article for the journal in which he said, sitting down to meditate is like putting a big sign above you with an arrow pointing right at you saying, karma cleansed here. So when you sit down to meditate, karma is going to arise to be cleansed. As he put it, in meditation, we open up to past karma and try not to create new karma. Through meditation, we are more able to see the karmic results of our actions and to open up and experience them. And we stop creating all kinds of negative, fearful, guilty, disgusted, shameful, defensive reactions to it. That's the lack of equanimity, all those reactions we have to our karma. It's in this ability to listen and receive past karma and to be equanimous and compassionate towards it that it ceases. When we don't react to it, so again, there's the non-reactive mind, it isn't able to continue creating more footprints. End of quote. This is the way in which we're owners of our own karma. And in this way, equanimity cleanses karma. And I think that's a very interesting attribute or action of the mind of equanimity. It cleanses karma. Now, we can't understand equanimity and understand what equanimity is, especially in its equal aspect, without an understanding or an insight into shunyata, or emptiness. And because the whole notion of emptiness can be a bit dry and abstract, it can be easy to ignore it in our practice, and so I always like to pick on it. But if we can think of emptiness in its kind of messiest and most accessible form, I think we can view it as the deepest and most profound interconnection of all that is. And the depth of this interconnection takes lifetimes, I think, to fathom, to reveal itself. It takes the long, slow process of dropping away the self, or whittling away the self, or eroding the self, bit by bit by bit. And as we let go or whittle away at that self which separates us and makes us very hard and solid, those strands of interconnection begin to show themselves. And we begin to see how deeply profound we're interconnected. And this is a very wonderful exploration, I think. So it shows us that we all arise together. We each contain the whole, and the whole contains each. like the Sandokai says, when minute infinitely small becomes, infinitesimally small becomes, when large it transcends all dimensions space. Everything has its place and nothing is out of place. The mind of equanimity is more readily cultivated when we recognize that no thing has its own independent existence, that no thing is more important than any other thing because we're all mixed up in this together. We all have our place in it, and we're all equal in the mix. Everything has its role. And really, it's impossible to cultivate equanimity without this recognition or understanding. Now, Reverend Master Daishin Morgan over at Throssell expresses it this way, quote, "A single life is an expression of the whole, and so are all living beings and every form of existence. Nothing exists without everything else, and more than that, nothing exists without also being the expression of everything. Nothing exists without also being the expression of everything. When we let go of clinging and the illusion of separation, we realize that absolutely nothing is missing. There never really was a hole to fill in the first place." End of quote. Existence is undivided, as he would say. And equanimity is a profound recognition that it is sufficient. In every moment, there is sufficiency because existence is undivided. When we can truly rest in this sufficiency, there is nothing to reject and nothing to prefer. When we can truly rest in this sufficiency, there is nothing to reject and nothing to prefer. Now, shunyata, or emptiness, also means that all our conceptions of things are wrong. And I think that's another good one for Americans. One of the great destroyers of equanimity is our ideas and opinions. And when we can clearly see that all ideas and opinions are wrong, equanimity is the natural result. So as with loving kindness, as Reverend Master Shiko pointed out last week, equanimity is our natural state. These four Brahma Viharas are our natural state. When we touch the natural radiance, the natural radiance of the mind, heart, heart-mind, when we see how deeply we can trust the way that things are, when we truly know that all is well, and all manner of things are well, all manner of things are well, to paraphrase Julian of Norwich, then equanimity is right in front of us. The experience of equanimity is a deep, deep silence, a total letting go, a boundless vastness, and utter relaxation. Utter relaxation, serenity. Self and other dissolve into each other, and all merges with the great unborn. The way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply give up picking and choosing. Thank you.